Hey, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today, we're going to keep going with this series about slavery. And we're going to talk about a few new subtopics in that category. We're going to be talking about how equivocation happens when people talk about slavery versus slavery that we see around the world and throughout history versus the slavery that is portrayed in the Old and New Testaments, and how they are so different. We're going to talk about different forms of slavery, and we're also going to cover why atheists cannot reject slavery from their own worldview. So anyway, let's go ahead and just jump right in. So I want to talk about the equivocation that takes place when we talk about slavery in our past versus slavery that is found in the Old Testament. Equivocation is what happens, and by the way, you guys can go back and look at my, in the series of logical fallacies, I talk about equivocation. And although I'm thinking about re-recording that podcast because I'm not exactly excited with how it turned out. I think I could have done it a little better. That's okay. If you want to know more about equivocation, look that logical fallacy teaching up. Equivocation is basically shifting from one meaning of a word to another within an argument. Okay, so you have an agreed upon meaning of a word, and you use it within an argument where you shift to another meaning of the same word and try to treat it as if it's the same, although kind of a sleight of hand, a moving of a pea to a different cup has just happened. Okay, let's get some examples. In that teaching about equivocation that I did, I talked about how there's actually six different definitions of evolution. In fact, there's more than six. And, you know, we all know that organisms change genetically a little bit. There's boundaries. We'll talk about that in a different series. But, you know, when two parents have a child, the child's a little bit different. There's a blending of traits. And sometimes a little bit of change over time happens. If you move to a different climate in the world and live there for a few generations, your children will adapt, your grandchildren will adapt to that new climate a little bit. The color of their skin might change a little bit. Their complexion, their eyelids might change a little bit. Their hair, their skin, their digestive system might even adapt a little bit to the new water that they're drinking. I'm getting sidetracked. Equivocation is basically that. Now, when we think of slavery here in America, and I think this would probably apply to most of you around the world. When you think of slavery, you think of people being kidnapped against their will. You think of whips and chains. You think of forced labor. You think of these people that are all malnourished. They're underfed. They're all skinny and nasty looking. Their teeth are all falling out. They're all messed up. People beating slaves. People being sex slaves, slaves being raped. You think of, especially here in America, these slaves being held down as far as intellectually. They're kept from learning things. You don't want them to learn to read and write, right? You know, you think of slaves being bought and sold as property. Now, everything I just said is disgusting. It's despicable. It ought not to be done, and we know this. But when you look at the biblical form of slavery, and I will prove every single point I'm about to make, okay? So I'm just giving you a quick overview of what the Old Testament actually shows of slavery. And I'm going to prove all this. But when you look at the biblical view of slavery, in most cases, we're looking at indentured servitude. We're talking about slaves that are actually, you're encouraged to love your slave in the Bible. To love your slave? These slaves are taught about the faith of the Jews. Now, if you're an atheist and you're listening to this, you're probably aghast right now. You're going, what? That's so cruel. Well, walk with me for a little bit, okay? If Christianity is true, and I understand a lot of people have been taught a few verses of the Bible here and there, but they're not being taught the Bible in context. God, the God of the Bible, is an amazing, loving God, okay? And this actually is a good thing. I'll talk about that later too, okay? Biblical slavery. We're talking about slaves that are taken care of. They're well fed. They're loved on. Okay? And get this. They're set free every 7 years. So there's a 6-year cycle. If you get put into slavery the day after the year of Jubilee ends, okay, you're going to serve 6 years and then you're going to be set free. And not only are you going to get set free, you're going to get set free with a care package. You're going to be provided with food, drink, and money. They're going to set you free with a package of goods to make sure you make it in the world and you have something to use to get on your feet. Huh. Well, gee, guys, that doesn't sound like the other view or version of slavery, not at all. And a moment ago, when I started that, I talked about the indentured servitude. Okay, what is that? Well, I'm going to give you a modern day version of this. Now, it doesn't really happen in the United States nowadays, but when I was growing up, my family would always joke about this kind of stuff. It's that idea of, okay, you go out, you have dinner, and suddenly you realize you forgot your wallet. You ain't got no money. Well, what do you do? What does the restaurant do? Well, I suppose, I don't even know if this actually happened, but at least my family would joke about, well, you got to go back in the kitchen and do the dishes then. And you're going to have to work off that money you owe. That's indentured servitude. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we go on here. It's the idea that you owe something and you're going to pay up. This doesn't apply to all forms of slaves. We're going to talk about Jewish slaves. We're going to talk about criminals who find themselves in slavery, right? We got to look at each of these separately. We're going to talk about foreigner slaves. How do you treat foreigners? We're going to talk about slaves of war. And we're even going to talk about some subtopics like female slaves. And how does that work? Can you rape them? Can you force them to marry you? And all that good stuff. So when you become a slave, biblically, I'm just trying to give you some modern day examples to give you a picture briefly of what biblical slavery looks like. You know, if you're a criminal and you commit crimes, what happens nowadays? I am not endorsing our modern day legal system here in the U.S. We have got issues here in the U.S., but, okay, I'm just trying to give you a feel here. If you commit a crime, what happens? You get thrown in prison. And at least in some prisons, not all of them, you end up making license plates or doing some other weird task that hopefully benefits us in the United States, right? You know, the point is to work off what you've done. Now, we are so backwards here in the United States with our legal system. And gosh, if you kill Michael Jackson, you get 4 years in prison. But if you pirate Michael Jackson's music and you get caught, you get 5 years in prison. What about this? If you rape a child and get caught, you get 3 years in prison. Okay, you just ruined that child forever. You ruined them. And you get 3 years of prison? Are you kidding me? But if you mess up on your taxes and the IRS decides they don't like you, you get 10 years in prison. All right, don't get me started. If my wife was sitting here with me, I would get repeated punches in the shoulder. She'd say, stick to the topic. Get your tinfoil hat off. All right. So I'm going to take it off. But you get my point. If you commit a crime, sometimes you got to work it off. What about this? If you're a prisoner of war, what happens here in the U.S.? Well, I'll tell you this much. Don't expect to get released, especially if you're a prisoner in a war that we feel was right. Okay, there's no real debate about it. Okay? Now, that doesn't happen all the time, but I'm going to take my tinfoil hat off. I'm not even going to put it on. But the idea is, if you're a prisoner of war, we don't want you to start a rebellion. We don't want you to organize. We don't want you to go back out and do what you already did and what took part in causing the war in the first place, as in the case of terrorists and stuff like that. We're going to lock you up, and you're not getting out. Okay? Did that happen in the Bible? Well, kind of. In fact, it's a little bit better than how we do it here. But we'll get to that. And while I'm at it, before we get real deep into this, if you're an atheist and you object to slavery, let me ask you this. If you believe that we are a product of material only, there is no spiritual component to us, we are molecules in motion. We are, like Frank Turek likes to say, it's like a pop can fizzing. We're just a reaction. Everything going on in our brain is just this reacting to that. Simple genetics that have grown from a rock sometime millions of years ago and have mutated in this direction and that direction, we are just material reacting to the environment around us. How in the world can you condemn slavery? I'm just asking. I mean, how can you even say it's wrong? How can you say that we ought not take somebody slave, steal people, kidnap them, force them to do labor for us, maybe even rape them once in a while for the purpose of survival of the fittest? Hey, you know, we're producing children. We're passing on our genes. How can you object to that from your, not mine, your worldview? How do you do that? After all, it's survival of the fittest. You know, you kidnap them. They're the weak one. And now you're forcing to work for you. You're the strong one. Right? You're just helping evolution along from your perspective. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. So I'm just asking, how can you condemn slavery from your worldview? You have no leg to stand on. I'm sorry. It's just like, you prefer, you don't like carrots or Brussels sprouts. I don't like that. I mean, that's about it. That's as far as your objection can really go from an evolutionary standpoint. I don't like that. You can't say it's wrong. Wrong according to what? So that's another series in and of itself. But I just wanted to bring that up. Because I think it's silly that atheists even make a big deal about this. They have no room. They have no grounds to stand on. They have to borrow from a Christian worldview to attempt to refute Christianity. So anyway. And I think that's a good spot to stop. Guys, come out to the website, youthapologeticstraining.com, and I have LiveFire installed on my website now. And so I have this new enhanced ability for comments and questions, as well as we can, in a sense, each post can contain its own live thread going. The comments are real time, so when you post them, they pop up right away and people can actually interact with each other. So it's a neat new feature. I added it to the website. I'm kind of excited about it. So I thought I'd let you guys know about that. And also, just reminding you again, you guys, if you like these apologetics type podcasts, please share them with your friends, share them with your family, pass this on, let people know that this is happening. And with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.